and Josh ready to talk Tiger football. On and ever forward, we help our school. Students whose hearts are always, ever true. Those black and golden colors, floating on high, high. Hail to the glory of Tipton High. Go team, go team, go. Fight team, fight team, fight. Win team, win team, win. Team fight, fight, fight. Team, all we do is win, win, win.
Welcome in the third and long podcast.
All right, we are back for episode 6.
It's been a rough go so far, Josh.
This was a tough one. This is one that I truly felt we needed to keep our playoff hopes alive. We're going to talk about it. We wanted to control our own destiny, and this is now going to create a little bit of havoc in the destiny of how we're going to get to the playoffs.
Agreed.
We still have options. There's still hope. Obviously, from a team standpoint, you still want to play for a successful end of the year.
Right.
There's a lot to be had here. Obviously, we have a huge rival against West Branch upcoming.
Big game.
We have Bellevue, and then we close out against Monticello.
A very winnable game.
Yep.
Yeah, very beatable Monticello team, who's also sitting at 1-5 on the year.
Yep. But yeah, it was a beautiful night. You and I were both there. We watched the game together.
Absolutely.
Right there on Anamosa's football field. I think it has a name, but I can't think what it was, like Bill.
Oh yeah,
Bill Burr Field or something.
It was like a little plaque out in the on the home stand.
So they had a little tailgate. Kudos to Citizens Bank and Nick Weirs. Yep. He's the Citizens Bank president, and so he's part of the Anamosa and Tipton chapter.
Yep.
And he put a little tailgate on. I guess
they
you
were like
see.
Throwing hot dogs at people as you're coming in.
Yep.
I came in. I thought the game started at 7, didn't know it was senior night and homecoming court night. Game didn't start till 7:30. I thought I was getting there on time. I got there a little early, but yeah, the tailgate was still going strong when I was there, and he did a heck of a job.
They even gave away apparel, which was pretty impressive. Yeah. Yeah. I think Leslie Timmerman won once again for the Tipton side.
Shocker.
So she wins. That's weird. She kind of wins everything.
When you put in 100 raffle tickets, you're bound to get pulled.
Yeah, so this episode is brought to you by Timmerman Farms. They're out in the field right now, probably as we speak.
Guarantee it.
I think he's up to, 5,000 acres of crops?
It's a lot, and he finally got his combine running, which I know was a pain point for him Friday night.
So hopefully he's listening to this, sitting in the combine doing some heavy-duty farming, what farmers do.
You know Jared is.
Yeah. So back to the game. Obviously the final score, 24-7. You say this about all of our games. It just wasn't the outcome that we wanted, but that is not kind of a – it was a lot closer than that.
It wasn't indicative of the game.
No.
Once again, our defense came to play. I thought we played a really nice bend but don't break defense. They did move the ball a little bit on us, but we tend to buck up when things got towards the red zone. And once again, our defense really did keep us in that football game.
Yeah, I guess I'm gonna go on a little different tangent. I actually thought we didn't play quite as good, to be honest with you. I thought if we would have played like we did against Alburnett,
mm-hmm.
I think we would have won that game. And I think you watched that opening drive where our defense came out to start. I thought, this is going to be good. Get a 3-and-out,
right.
Punt it to us, and let's go. They literally drove that thing down for right 5 minutes. Field. Every first down, they just kept inching. They just took 5, 6, 7 yards a pop. I thought that was a scary sight at the beginning because I thought if they're going to do this to us on the first drive, it's going to be a long game.
Yeah.
We did buckle down a little bit. Obviously, we held them down the rest of the half, but I still felt like we just never really got a flow where we controlled the game at all.
Yeah, we kind of did what we've done in the past, and that is gave up early touchdowns. You know, whether that be a kickoff return or a fumble on the kickoff, you know, we didn't have that catastrophic thing, but we had something equally as catastrophic, and that was a very solid drive by Anamosa to start the game out. It didn't set a great tone. But like I said, we did tend to buck up a little bit after that, though.
We did, but I will say we gave up 360 yards of total offense, 240 yep. yards rushing we gave up.
Yep.
That will not go well on most defensive coordinators' their box score. Gave up 162 yards to Hudson Scranton, and he had 40 carries. 40 carries. That's a lot of carries.
That's a ton of carries. I think if you want the stat to jump out at you for this game, it was that Anamosa ran 71 offensive
plays. A lot of plays. And that was back to those chunks. They were getting first downs. They were moving the ball. It just never felt like we were getting those stops when we needed them.
Yep. And, again, you compare that to our 41 total offensive plays.
Yep.
Fact of the matter is they just had the ball a lot longer than we did. Yep. They converted on crucial third downs. We tended not to. They kept the ball in the offense's hands. We tended not to.
Yeah, and we talked about it. We have to shut down Hudson Scranton. I don't think we did the job that we needed to. We did a better job against Alburnett than we did here.
Right.
I think they maybe saw the tape and saw what we were kind of doing and did a lot of outside runs if you watched it. They kind of hit the edge, and we just didn't seal the edge very well. Mm-hmm. Their quarterback, his numbers weren't great, but he was 14 for 17. And we're giving up – I would have to look at our overall defense percentage, but we are giving up a high percentage of completions. I mean, he was 82% on the night.
I was going to say, if he was 82% on the night, yeah.
He did throw the two big picks, one big one to Garrett that he returned back, and that kind of set up what I thought was a pretty crucial moment in the game where we went in for the go-ahead score to take the lead.
Arms were raised as a touchdown.
Their arms are raised, and people in the crowd were high-fiving, and then all of a sudden you see the little yellow beanie on the ground.
Yep.
It was a holding call. I haven't gone back to look. I almost think the holding was on the right side. We ran it to the left.
It was opposite the
play,
I believe. So
it's something where it didn't even affect the play. Right. Those are killers. And, you know, you can call holding on every play. They decided to call it on that one, that it was egregious enough. I'm guessing it was probably on Antonelli. Trying to hold him down.
Probably, because I do think we tried to run away from him as much as we possibly could. So, yeah, he was on the left side, or he was on their left side rushing, and we ran to our offensive left side away from him.
So there was kind of like, I don't know, three or four different big plays, I thought. One is that play right there, the holding on the touchdown. That changed everything, because not only did it take points off the board, give us a lead, which we've not had in a while. We've not had a lead in a long time here. You could just feel the momentum was shifting. It was our game to have.
Without a doubt.
They then took it. You go back another 10 yards from the spot of the foul, and we just kind of sputtered out, got 0 points out of it.
Yep.
And to get 0 points when you were counting on having the seven,
it's a killer. You can see how deflating it was.
Yeah.
Just to the guys in the field. It's such a momentum game, and we had it for a split second, and we lost it with one flag.
Yep. You know, there were two other – I guess ref things that occurred that I wanted to bring up before we kind of get diving into the game. But the one was a safety. You and I were right down there. It's a unique spectator.
Yeah, you can spot. Stand on the track.
You literally can stand very close to the field.
Yeah.
We were right there. Maybe not right down the line, but we were just in the end zone.
Maybe 3 yards into the end zone.
And we got it across the goal line very clearly. It wasn't like a huge spot, but we definitely got it to the one and then got knocked back and fell in the end zone. So most refs would say, okay, forward line of progress, we got it out to the one, or inch line, whatever you want to say. Right. It definitely went across the goal line, whatever it was. The ball at minimum went across.
Again, if you ask me, I didn't even – the thought of a safety didn't enter my mind on that play.
And what frustrates me is at no point were the refs putting their hands up for safety until the very last minute when they looked and the ball's behind. Well, yeah, he got tackled from behind.
Right.
But you have to be able to see that forward progress. Those are the line judges that should have saw that. If I can see it from the track, they're definitely watching that. They can see that.
You know, they're watching the Anamosa defense put their hands up over their head saying it's a safety. And I just feel like that call was influenced a little bit because it was so late.
Yep.
And they looked where the ball was at the end of the play, obviously in the end zone. They looked at the Anamosa team putting their hands up as a safety. I think they just got influenced on that, and that was a killer as well.
The last one I'm going to talk about, you know, the game was, I don't want to say it was kind of out of hand, but there was a lot of chippiness going on. There was a personal foul already by Hudson Scranton, number 12. He had one personal foul. I think it was a late hit, wasn't it?
Yeah, I thought it was on
the – actually, it was the same exact
previous play. Punt.
Previous punt.
So Garrett Fitch had punted. And they put two people on Fitch to block Fitch for their return.
To block the punt. Have you ever seen that, Mr. Punter?
No, I haven't. Actually, I've had people pick me up on the punt, but not two. You don't get double teamed. Garrett Fitch is a great tackler. I get maybe you don't want him to make the play. I don't know why. That's kind of weird. But so, yeah, I think it was like two or three punts before that. They had these two guys had knocked Garrett down, Hudson did his best to get on top of him and really, really nail down that block, which he got a personal foul for, or a penalty for. And so the same thing happens again on this crucial play where, yes, we were down. We needed a little bit of life. A little bit of life. We see the same thing happen. Those two guys knock Garrett down, kind of get on top of him. And
flag came out.
Drive him to the ground. Flag comes out. We're like, that's Hudson's second personal foul, which I'm not.
I want to say the announcer even announced it as a personal foul because the ref called it as such.
That's what they called it as. It was, they were walking back 15, or they were walking Anamosa back 15
the
yards.
Ref went and talked to the coach, the head coach for Anamosa, who looked like he was fairly upset.
Yep.
He was looking for another player potentially to bring in, what they were going to do. And the refs got together. There was at least 5 minutes of conversation. Maybe I'm exaggerating, but it felt like five minutes.
I don't think you are.
At the end of the 5 minutes, not only was there pick up the flag, no personal foul, there's no personal foul. It was holding against us.
Not against just us.
The punter.
It's Garrett, the punter, who was being blocked by two separate people completely out of the play.
And this is where I struggle with this, is think if you really think about it, the punter should be going down to make a tackle. So who would they possibly be blocking for? Like, who are you blocking? Makes no sense.
I'll be honest. I've never, ever, ever seen a hold on the punter after the punt was kicked, ever.
It might be the first time in Iowa history. I might have to look it up.
I don't know. I didn't think
AI that existed. Might have to look into it. What I was told that was reflected back to the Tipton bench is that Garrett was basically, they were jacking around, like not jacking around, but like there was a lot of messing around going on.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was holding on to Scranton, who was, I guess if that his job's probably to be there to block, but if you're holding on to him, he can't go down and block.
I'll be honest. That was, to me, as big a momentum changer as
the Nats,
as the Nats, as the hold was on the called back touchdown, because we were thinking, okay, we're still kind of in this. That's Hudson's second personal foul. He's going to be out of the game.
This is beginning of the second half, right?
Yeah.
This is early. Or no, it was towards the end of the third. Yeah. But you have the whole fourth quarter, and we're
kind of in it, especially if you get rid of their best player.
Yeah.
We're really in it.
Yep.
Because not only was Hudson Scranton a great runner, he had two picks as well. Yep. And he was their leading tackler, or their second leading tackler behind Antonelli. So, again, getting Hudson out of the game was huge. Not only do we think we're going to push him back another 15 yards past that punt, we thought Hudson's gone. There's a chance, and to completely flip that and push it against us, give them an extra 10 yards, it was deflating, to say the least.
It was. Last one, we talked about the field. The field was actually in decent shape in comparison to other years. Credit to Anamosa there. Troy Smock getting things in tight there, so good job. But they do have an issue down there, and it was in full force, the Nats.
Nats were bad.
Those are terrible.
Those are horrible. As bad of bugs as you see in a football game.
I looked up in the lights, and it looked like the birds from the movie from the 1970s.
Well, again, you're only about 100 yards away from the lagoon system in Anamosa there, so I have a feeling they're maybe drawn to some of that.
Either move the lagoon system or you move the football field.
You gotta move one of the two.
Yeah. But, yeah, and then it kind of got away there at the end. Obviously, we kind of lost the lead in the fourth quarter. Just never could kind of get our footing on offense, and I think that's been the story of our whole year, is we never have been able to kind of have those sustained drives like Anamosa did to start the game, where he just marched it right down the field. It wasn't some big play. It was 7-8 yards every play, and then you score a touchdown, get it in where you want to.
Yep.
We are having trouble getting it in the red zone. That has been a big problem for us.
Because a lot of our offense is going so far downfield with Garrett's arm.
Yep.
And when you shorten that field up, there's – He can't throw those 40-yard bombs.
So, you look at it, rushing was, not terrible, but Garrett was our leading rusher, had 46 yards, averaged 6 yards a carry. I thought he did a really nice job of getting outside the pocket, reading the defense, neither running or passing. I mean, that was kind of what our success came from, is from him doing that.
Yep.
Never could get Ethan Holub, who I thought had a nice, really nice game on defense. He did some really nice things.
I agree.
On the defense side, offensively, just couldn't get him going. I mean, 5 carries, 15 yards, three yards of attempt. Then Oakley had one carry for 2 yards. 63 yards.
It's not going to cut it. And, you know, the other side of this is we put so much of this into Garrett Fitch, his hands. 27 pass attempts, 11 for 27. Again, like you said, the 8 runs. So now 35 of our 41 plays were dependent on Garrett.
Yep.
You know, and so our ability to again, establish a running game, we've talked about this all year long, our ability to establish a running game or lack thereof, really played into that. They could key on Garrett and really key on a majority of our offense by doing that.
So I got to give a little bit of a shout out to our offense line. We haven't given them much this year. I think numbers have always been, you know, like, well, we're not, our line's not holding, so we can't get the rushing, we can't get the passing. But they gave up 1 sack against Antonelli, who's one of the better defensive linemen in our district. We only gave up 1 sack the whole night. Now, granted, some of that is Garrett getting outside of the sacks, moving around in the pocket. So right. kudos to both of them, I guess, because sacks are just like penalties to me, and you lose the down.
No doubt. Yeah, no doubt.
And so,
we did tend to put Jacob Langley on the line across from Antonelli. Mm-hmm. I was kind of having fun watching those two.
That was a fun battle.
On offense and defense, because we always talk about Jacob Langley as this great defender, mm-hmm. you know. Pretty damn good offensive lineman as well. The beauty of what Jacob's doing this year is he's going where he's asked to go. And whether that's carry the football, block from the backfield, or block from the offensive line, I think he's doing a nice job anchoring wherever we're asking him to be.
So when he can't run the ball or didn't have success running it,
right.
We did have 11 catches. I thought we spread the ball. You know, in the past it's been kind of a Oakley and maybe Braden or Gavin. It was nice to spread the ball around a little bit. Gavin had 4 catches, 57 yards, and that one touchdown that we had.
Yep.
Oakley had the 3 catches, 24 yards. Had a couple, in previous years, I think previous games, maybe he would have caught. He came down. I mean, he had tough catches in this game, but
sure.
Just didn't come down with it completely. Yep. But there was a couple I saw. I was like, man,
it was good.
We're so used to him catching that that you're disappointed when he doesn't come down with it.
Normally, Oakley gets the circus catches. I agree. And you're probably going to mention him here, but Gavin Sorgenfrey, I thought
that's who, yeah, with the touchdown,
yeah, just played a really nice game, all the way around, defense, returning kicks, receiving, 4 catches for 57 yards and that touchdown. I thought Gavin played one of the better games of the season for him.
Yep, and then obviously Ethan had a couple catches as well. I think we need to see some more of that. Have Ethan out of the backfield, whether it's a screen mm-hmm. or doing little kind of V cuts. Using him out of the backfield, he's got speed, put some pressure on those linemen or linebackers, and I think the screen game, if he can be in there to help block, just turn around, make a little dump pass, let him work out in space, I think we're missing that.
We talked about that 6 weeks ago, and getting the ball to Ethan Holub is going to be important. We need some things to go right. We still actually control our own destiny. The fact that if we win the last 3 games, I think you win the last 3 games, you're probably in. I don't know if that's 100%, but yes. I guess Bellevue would be an automatic bid at this point. But I don't know. I think that we still need to find a way. We have 3 games left to figure this out. We still need to find a way to get Ethan Hall the ball in space.
Yep. This would be a really good start this week. I think the one thing also, I love screens. I think it's really puts a lot of pressure on the defense, especially when your line may be struggling. Love the screen games, whether it's a tight end, whether it's a running back, fullback, whatever it is, mm-hmm. utilize the heck out of that and screen yeah. them to death until they prove it, like, okay, we know that's coming. And then the other thing, we saw a little bit of it, I think it was late in the game, we saw a crossing route where the yes. route came all the way across and we hit it. We haven't seen a lot of that. And I don't know if it's a time where we don't have time to wait for it to develop.
Sure.
But we have the speed to get across the formation. And that is, as a defender, I can tell you, almost impossible to stay with someone when someone's dragging across the field and you don't know if they're going to stop, if they're going to keep running. It's really hard.
I will tell you, as a former linebacker, picking up crossing routes is probably one of the toughest jobs as a linebacker.
Yeah.
To your point, you don't know if they're going to sit down in a spot or if they're going to continue to drag. And when they do continue to drag, it sometimes pulls you out of your position. So I agree. If we can get the time – to make that route happen. I'd love to see more cross trainers, especially someone like Braden Collender, who's big, strong, can maybe take a couple hits.
Yep.
Another guy I have to give a shout out to, because I thought he had just the best game of his career, is Max Lashmet.
Yep.
Had 11 and a half tackles, 5 solo. Again, I like what we're doing on defense. We moved Justin Boedeker to that strong safety position, moved Gavin Sorgan Fry to the corner spot. You want to see your strong making tackles. You know, love to see your free safety. Oakley Crews making a ton of tackles. And
Coach Hornsby mentioned that last week.
Yep, and I think Justin did a really nice job of inserting himself into a lot of plays. Like I said, ended with 8 tackles. 6 of those were solo.
He might have done too good of a job.
When you insert yourself in that many plays, you tend to get injured. And so I know that he might be nursing some injuries, and we'll see what that means for him on Friday night.
Yep. So overall, like I said, I know the players are disappointed. I know the coaching staff's disappointed because they felt like we could have won that. Obviously, the parents and us podcasters and spectators, we feel like we wanted that game. You know, a district win. Haven't had a win all year. So now we're sitting here 0-5, kind of feeling the blues. And,
yep.
You know, it gets tough. This is where kind of we felt this the last couple of years. It drags on. The football season drags on when you have losing seasons.
Absolutely. It's gut check time. Honestly, the deal is, you got 3 games left. Have some pride. You're not out of it yet. And I hope they're not sitting in practice this week saying, man, we're out of this thing. Let's cash this thing in. Let's mail this thing in. Because they're not out of it yet. They still have something to play for. There's still some winnable games sitting in front of us, including Friday night.
I think a lot of these kids that played baseball a couple years ago saw what happened with our Tipton baseball team. I think we had like maybe 7 wins. You know, this is a 40-game season.
Yep.
It's 7 wins all year. Got to playoffs and got hot.
Yeah.
And went on a massive run, almost made it to sub-state to go to state.
Unless they just barely got beat by Wilton, I think, at the end. Yeah.
And I look at this, you know, we lost to Elbernett 14-0. And that's a game that I felt like could have won.
Yep.
Based off of how we were playing. You know, Elbernett beat West Branch 21-20.
Yes.
You know, so West Branch is...
Elbernett's ranked... What, 6?
I think a lot of us, including myself, we have this stigma of West Branch of, well, we're not going to beat them because it's a football community.
That's a football school, yeah.
Butch has, you know, built this legacy. Butch has been gone, and we've had 2 now coaching staffs come through. This is a different team, different players in the program. In fact, they've never played really for Butch, a lot of these kids. So from my vantage point, this is the time, like I've said, if you want to prove yourself, this would be a perfect week to do it. And if you want to knock off West Branch, the first time since 1984 that's happened.
Wow.
Tipton has not won. In fact, one of our coaches, Darren Lins, played in the game the last time that Tipton won. So I got to give a shout out to Darren. He was part of a winning team with Tipton that beat West Branch. So if you want to be one of the first teams to beat West Branch, that is your victory for the season. Like
I was gonna say, you'll
go down in history.
Exactly, your legendary status.
There's not a lot of people from Tipton that can say that, and there's been a lot of good teams that have came and gone that couldn't get by West Branch, and this is a big time rivalry. A lot of the parents would tell you this is probably our biggest rival in football.
Yep.
We've gone away from it because they were always 1A and we were 2A,
sure.
As well as just there was some stuff there that people didn't want to play.
There was some bad blood in there.
There was, just didn't play.
It's the same reason Iowa and Iowa State stopped playing for about 15, 20 years there.
Exactly. So I think there's a lot to play for. And I look at it. I think Monticello can beat Anamosa this week. If we're huge Monticello fans this week.
Correct.
So if Monticello wins and beats Anamosa, and then at the end of the year we beat Monticello. There's potential for a 3-way tie as long as those 2 teams don't beat someone else. Right?
Absolutely. Yep.
Then it comes down to a tiebreaker. I had to look this up today because I did not know, and I don't think too many people know because it's new and people haven't looked into it. There's a 17-point variance. So you can only lose by 17 points in district play.
They still have the point variance.
Have the point variance.
I didn't even know. I remember back in the day, in the late 90s, it was 13 points.
Yeah.
You know, if you won by more than 13.
Well, I think even when I was when I was going through, it was just straight up points. And there wasn't a variance for us, at least, because we were trying to run up scores on people. to do that.
It was.
Okay.
But wins less than 13 points, I remember in my last year, 1998, wins less than 13 gotcha. Points counted less.
Yeah.
And over 13 points, yeah, that's when you started to run up scores.
So it's 17. Where that comes into play is Alburnett losing 14-0. I could see Alburnett running it up against Anamosa and yes. Monticello more than that.
Yep.
When you look at your total score, we're hopeful that we really want Monticello to beat Anamosa, and we want those two to then lose the rest of their games by a lot, and we need to put it on Monticello.
Absolutely.
So those things can happen. Those are realistic things that can happen. I can see Monticello beating Anamosa. If Anamosa beats Monticello, then we come into this where we're going to need to basically beat West Branch and Bellevue.
And Bellevue.
Yeah.
Yep.
There's an outside, real small chance. If you beat Bellevue, you beat Monticello, then you're hopeful that Bellevue loses out, and essentially you're going in over Bellevue and Monticello because you'd have the tiebreaker. But Bellevue's already got a win in district.
Exactly.
So we'd have to do some damage there.
They got two in district right now, right?
Correct.
So, yeah.
But back to my point, if we beat them, if they don't win this week and then we beat them,
and then they lose the last one,
then we would have a tiebreaker. Sure. So there's some odd things, but it's not stuff that I want to have to deal with.
I was going
to
say, how about we just go win the last three games? Control our destiny.
Correct.
It is in our hands still. That kind of moves on, if you don't mind, to West Branch.
Let's do it.
And what they're going to throw at us and what they're going to look like. For me, it's going to come down again to our run defense. You know, we got to see a healthy dose of Hudson Scranton on Friday night. We're going to see a real, real healthy dose of Keaton Gates this coming Friday.
Hold up. Keaton or Cooper?
Both, but namely Keaton.
I believe one of them's was hurt or is hurt, or there's something going on with one of them.
Well, you never hope for someone to be hurt, but I hope so.
Keaton is having the better year.
Yeah.
I believe Cooper is maybe the better running back, I want to say. And I say that because I think last year he was their top running back, and he was supposed to be their top running back this year, but Keaton has came on strong.
I say Keaton has almost double the carries of Cooper right now, 63 carries for 658. Yards with 5 TDs.
And he had that massive first game against West Liberty, I believe.
Yeah, what was it like?
270 some yards. Yeah.
A lot of that came in game one.
They both have you look at their squad, they've got 1,200 yards rushing already. They're averaging 8 yards a carry as a team. They got 17 touchdowns rushing. This is a run first, run it down your throat,
yep,
Matt Hughes style offense.
Absolutely.
I talked to some players who played against this team. They said, do not worry about their pass. They have a couple kids that are fast, but do not worry about their pass. Load the freaking box and stop the run, because that's how you're going to beat this team.
Yeah. Again, they've got 57 pass attempts on the year compared to, I didn't do the math here, but 141 rushing attempts so far on the year.
They do have 6 touchdowns, but I think a lot of those are some long passes. I don't think Brendan Dale is going to beat you with his arm. He's 42% completion percentage.
Well, let's go back to Alburnett. If we're going to lose this game, make Brendan Dale beat us. Don't let Cooper or Keaton Gates beat us.
Where he can beat you, though, is with his legs.
That's what, exactly.
He's got 30 carries, 226 yards rushing, and 4 touchdowns. They've got some nice stats out there with their rushing, I can tell you that. And they've got a guy who's their receiver D-back that I have a feeling they're going to try to get him the ball more. Brandon Peterson, who's your 100-meter dash state champion from West Branch, also plays basketball.
Yep.
He was gone for 3/4 of the first game against West Liberty, but he is a burner, and so we're going to have to account for him. He's only got 7 catches for 98 yards, but he does have that 80-yard touchdown. Someone that we're going to have to keep an eye on. But I wouldn't even put safeties in this game. I would say if you're going to beat us over the top, kudos to you, and we'll let you do that.
Right.
But you're not going to run 7 yards a carry down our throat.
Maybe put Gavin and Jackson Timmerman out on islands by themselves and say good luck.
Have a little cushion.
Go cover. Yeah.
And, you guys are going to have to – we're going to put you on islands.
So, again, for me, a lot of this can come down to Jacob Langley, who had his biggest game of the year, and that's saying something because he's had some huge games this year. against Anamosa, 17 tackles. 8 of those were solo. Again, just did a fantastic job. It's going to depend a lot on what we try to do with him. This isn't a team that's coming in with one guy. It's not just Brennan Dale. It's not just Cooper Gates or Keaton Gates. We can't sit and spy one person. So I think it's going to be important for our linebacking core. Max Lashmit, Jacob Langley, Ethan Hollum, to really read plays well, read, react well. I was talking to Jacob Langley a little bit at halftime with the Santa Mosa game. Keep depth. Take a half second before you take your first step. See where the play is going and go read, react. Once you figure out where the play is going, move quick. But don't get yourself caught up in a line where you're going to pull yourself out of the play.
Yep.
That and our ends. Our ends, our outside backers, have to contain because Brennan Dale will tuck and run.
Yep.
And if we can't contain him, he will hit the outside. And once he's out there, especially if we're loading the box, we don't have anybody to save that tackle.
We're going to have assignment football, and someone's going to have assignment on each player, basically, where someone's got to be accounted for. You can't put all your eggs into the running backs because Dale will tuck it and run, and
he absolutely will.
We're going to be in some trouble. You know, I look at this, and I talked about it. Coming into this week, I was like, this is alarming. You know, they beat Comanche 56-7. That's a team that beat us,
yeah.
Comanche. They beat West Liberty 35-21. That's a team that beat us.
Yep.
They played pretty tight against Regina, who's one of the top teams in 1A. Until this week, Alburnett takes them down 20-17. That gave me a little bit of breath into my sails.
I feel
like if you can stop their run, and that's what Alburnett is focused on, that's what I think we can do, I think we can hold them down. Now, offense is going to have to put up some points. We can't put up 7 points. We just can't
win with seven. We can't win with seven.
That's been the problem all year, is we've been trying to win with seven.
Right.
And we've been close, but it's just not enough.
Right.
And so I hate to put all the stress back on the offense, but we're going to have to see some creativity. We're going to have to see some different options to get yards that maybe is not there, because obviously the run pass lead out of shotgun, it's just not there right now. Teams they're hitting us as we're doing the handoff.
And there's not a lot for Garrett. And for West Branch's defense, we talked about him already, Cooper Gates seems to be kind of their guy. He's got 26 tackles near 18 solo. The big number, though, is 7.5 sacks. So I don't know where he lines up other than a glorified D-end or outside backer position, but they definitely get him in the backfield. To your point, I don't know if Cooper Gates is rushing. I'm not entirely sure we have a lot of time for repass options. And so, I think it's going to be important to, like we say it every week, establish some form of a run game, get creative, get the ball in our playmaker's hands. We already talked about Ethan Hollum. He just flat out does not have enough touches on the football in space so far this year, and we got to get him there.
So I can tell you this defense is senior heavy. They have 12 seniors that are in their stat category, only 4 underclassmen. So when you look at that, to me, it tells me this is a defense that I don't even think we have 12 seniors, do we?
Right.
I mean, that's a lot of 12 seniors on defense that are putting in some stats. Kudos to them. What jumps out to me on their stat line, they have 11 picks on the year, 11 interceptions on defense. Wait, I gave the wrong stat. Sorry about that. They do not have 11 interceptions. They have 1 interception. I was seeing something different there.
Again, for me, it's their defensive line. So if you got Cooper Gates, you got a Lincoln Neighbor, who's 61, 77, Michael Montgomery, all a bunch of sacks. I don't know if we'll be running with the middle on this team. Long story short, I don't know if we're going to run with the middle. I do think you have Keaton Gates as well as in a linebacker position. They have 4. Well, I know that Griffin Seidel, one of their D-backs, has 4 picks by himself.
Sorry, I actually was correct. I was looking at the stat line from Alburnett. They only had 1 pick. I'm like, what am I missing here? They have 11 picks on the year. That's a lot.
Right.
A lot of picks. So throwing against this team is going to be something where we got to take control of the ball. We have to limit turnovers. The games that we've been in is because we've limited turnovers, field position. All those things are be very important here.
Yeah, and we have 4 turnovers last week, I think. And I think Anamosa had 4 turnovers last week. We cannot do that. And honestly, I feel like if we go to one or two turnovers, we probably win the Anamosa game. We have to win the turnover battle for once to give ourselves a chance against a good team like West Branch.
Yep. Yep. Should be a good one. You know, from my vantage point, we need to come out and play like this is our last game of the year. And for the seniors, every one of these games is your last game. And, you know, I hate that they've moved to an 8-game schedule and then into playoffs. We used to play nine games and then into playoffs.
Yeah.
It's a short season when you're only playing 8.
It really is.
We've been stuck in that for a while, in that rut of playing eight games. Season goes by as quick. You know, we only have 3 games left in the regular season, then it's playoffs. And
to your original point, this is West Branch. This is, again, I know I've only been in Tipton for 11
years. It's our bowl game.
Exactly. I know I've been in Tipton for 11 years. If nothing else, if both these teams came in at 0-5, it doesn't matter. This should be a game you can get up for. I don't care where you are in the season. Get up for West Branch because it's a beatable football team if you play them the right way. You play disciplined football, to your point earlier, 11 assignments. Do your job. If you do your job and the guy next to you does his job, that's a winnable football game.
I'll tell you what I'm going to do. If we beat West Branch, I will come in and I will organize a cruise the loop for a half hour, and we're all going to have the windows down playing Welcome to the Jungle, Guns N' Roses. That's a 90s thing. We're just going to cruise from basically Casey's down to Tiger Mart and back, and we're going to do it for a half hour, just blaring music.
I'm in.
Basically a parade of fun. So
I'm in.
It's going to happen. We're organizing it. But we have to win that or else we're not doing it. So we'll let the police know it's happening.
Well, we're going to make it happen.
It's going to be fun. So this is this Sunday. It's at home.
Friday. This Friday.
Sorry. I'm already moving ahead.
I know you're on the NFL season already, which is great.
This Friday. Have not looked ahead at the weather. But just taking a peek at it.
It looks pretty good.
Well, after Comanche, it's hard to know. It does, but it's going to be hot, unfortunately. Yeah. High of 86 by kickoff. It's still going to be hot, 80 degrees. So
I mean, Don Cruz is still mad at me, so I'm not going to say it's not going to rain. There's always that chance out there somewhere. But it's going to be great football weather. The wind doesn't hit until Saturday and Sunday. No reason in the world not to get out to Tiger Field on Friday night.
Absolutely. All right, I'm mad at myself. We should have led with this already. But we do, our listeners, our tried and true listeners, we do have an update for you from Albia situation.
From Albia. So
I'll let you take this over.
I had already mentioned that Jacob Langley had 17 tackles on Friday night. Great game. His highest tackle game of the year. He was in second place coming into the game behind a guy named Fletcher Mick out of Albia, who was just light years ahead of him, like 15 tackles ahead of him, which is impressive because Jacob made a lot of tackles. Well, we knew those stats weren't right. We talked a little bit about it last week, and I might have sent a little note down to the Albia athletic director who had a coach's meeting for what I'm told is 3 hours long about their stat taking. And, you know, lo and behold, Fletcher Mick against Davis County, one of the worst teams that Albia plays
wouldn't
all year.
Wouldn't know it.
Only had 10 tackles this last Friday.
Gosh.
So it's kind of crazy how the stats.
Only played for a half, Clint.
Yeah, I bet. So I'm happy to report that Jacob is still in second place. However, he's only 2 tackles away from the first place spot. In class 2A in total tackles this year. And I'll tell you what, that guy deserves, he deserves to be number one the way he's played this year.
So what you're saying is Albia AD basically said, not only do we think the stats are correct, we're doubling down and saying we've rewatched them.
So they,
and basically called you a liar.
He did. They wrote me a very long email back saying that, again, they have a very long coaches meeting. Not only do they have 3 stat takers live during the game, they have 4 to 5 people who take defensive stats after the game watching film, and all the numbers come very close, he said. And, this is my favorite part, one of them used to take stats for ESPN. That was all that was said. I don't know what stats were taken for ESPN. I don't know if it was swimming
tennis.
Or lacrosse or tennis.
He's
or
a
ball,
tennis statistician.
Whatever. So they were very serious about it.
Give me a break.
Yeah. So, but no, that is good news. Jacob's well within the first place spot.
Well, thank you for the update. Thanks for supporting the Tipton Tigers.
Absolutely.
Calling people out with bunch of crap, I think. I'm glad to see that he's down to 10 tackles this
week. Fletcher Mick's dad and uncle were the two stat takers.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
We'll keep an eye on it for you. We'll keep you updated. Yeah, we'll get you some updates by the end of the year. All right, so let's move on to some other sports. We'll start with cross country. We had a meet in Williamsburg last night, and it was an elite meet. This is like
27 teams or something.
Clint, there was over like, I think there was 1,200 athletes because this is junior high through high school.
Unbelievable.
It got over at like 8 o'clock at night and started at 3:30. Like
it gets dark there.
Yeah, it's wild.
There's nowhere to park.
Yeah. We've got teams from Pella, Des Moines, all over the place. You got Solon, Mount Vernon, Xavier. All these big teams are there. It's very intimidating because there's just a huge amount of boys and girls running. So, you know, it's kind of questions of how are we going to do here. I thought we performed really well. I think the boys got fifth overall out of like 20 teams. The girls got sixth or seventh. And, you know, all the runs were pretty decent. I thought they were right in line with what I thought we would do.
Sure.
So decent times for us. We're starting to improve, starting to get in some kicks here. And that's what you want
to
see.
I'd say it's the right time of year to start to.
The wild thing is both teams were down to one more regular season meet. We got rid of the North Lynn meet, thank God.
Oh, we did?
Yep. And so now we have a little bit of a buffer between North Lynn and conference, which allows us to kind of do the taper and do some training that we didn't get to do before.
Yep.
So it's a good little break there. And I'm hopeful that we can kind of be coming into the conference meet at our peak versus being kind of drained down like we have in past years that I felt like we were.
Absolutely.
And so the boys, you know, Kyson Miller, I got to bring his name up. He's been terrific. He keeps getting better in the Anamosa meet on Saturday. He actually finished first out of all the boys. And I know Silas McGee has been hurt. So if we can get Silas back up with him, get Caleb Bowman, who finished first in this last meet, get those three packed up, and then our 4-5 runners kind of get up with them. Everett Giese's been having a nice season. We can get that fifth runner up with the fourth runner. The boys are going to be in the top 10.
Oh,
I'm telling you that right now.
That's great to hear.
And the girls, we're making progress. I think they're going to have a nice end of the year here as well. So our last meet, regular season meet, is up in, West Delaware, and we're on the golf course up there. Nice course. I doubt too many people are going to get up there, but if for some reason you want to come support them, I know they'll take you. But it's a real fun course up there. So up at Del High.
All right. But I love to hear Tipton Cross Country doing what Tipton Cross Country does, and that's find the top 10 every year. No matter rebuilding year, it doesn't really matter. So move on to volleyball. Since we've talked last, we've had a really nice run. The Tipton volleyball team were the North Cedar tournament champions this last weekend.
Ran through that. I don't think they lost, right?
Not only went 5-0, they didn't drop a set. So they didn't drop a set all day long. And, again, just played great quality volleyball all the way through. Beat up on a couple teams that we've already seen, like West Branch. Which was too bad for West Branch, because we beat them, I think, on Tuesday night, and then we'd turn around and we had to beat them again on Saturday. So
yeah.
I think they're tired of seeing Tipton volleyball, I will say that.
Yep.
Which we heard a lot of the Let's Play Football chants at the West Branch game. So I know they're gunned up and ready for this game. The Tipton girls are now 18-3 in volleyball.
How are they not ranked, Clint? Wilton is moving up. We beat Wilton head-to-head, has the same record as us, and they're ranked higher.
They're knocking us for our strength of schedule, which just hurts my head. It doesn't make any sense to me. But, again, it's obviously not something I get to control. But I don't mind the underdog role either, because I feel like some people maybe don't see us coming. We're quality all the way around. I'm having a hard time finding a weak spot on this volleyball team. So
I mean, we took West Liberty to 5 sets. We took Regina to 5 sets.
Yep.
What else do they want from us?
We took Regina to 4, but
those
4 sets were.
Yeah, they're all watched that. And I look at Wilton, and like I said, when you win head to head, that should knock you below Tipton the whole year.
Head should always win out
if you have the same record. So very frustrating.
But we got a big one.
Enormous at home too.
Enormous. Thursday night, October 2nd, at Tipton, at the middle school, we play Mid Prairie. And Mid Prairie, you have rankings up. I don't even know if you have rankings there, but they're, I think they're third or fourth in 3A. And
they've only been beat by Clear Creek and Mana, I think Iowa City West, and some other big school. Like, they have not been beat by anyone in 2A.
Yep. So yeah, honestly, no one in 2A has really given them the game that that I think we can give them tomorrow night, so on Thursday night.
I'll tell you this. This is one of the biggest, I would say, regular season matches that we've had maybe since Summer Daniels played. Yeah. And those of you that remember Summer Daniel, she was an exciting player. That was an exciting time for Tipton volleyball. We haven't seen a player like her since, but there is a girl coming to Tipton who has put up bigger numbers than Summer Daniel. And let me just kind of read this through you. So Summer Daniel's junior year, when she was kind of on fire, she had 500 assists. She had 476 kills, which is kind of unheard of for that.
Yep.
And then she also had, I want to say, 300 and some digs, which is, you know, kind of an odd stat category because those are all different categories. Looking at last season with Jovi Evans, who has a younger sister, Georgia, you're going to want to watch both of them. They look the same. They play the same style. They're fast. They're aggressive. Mm-hmm. They can jump. Last season, Jovi had 584 assists, 359 kills, and 374 digs. There isn't anyone in the state that did that last year.
That's
and
amazing.
She's on pace to put up very similar numbers. She's got 181 assists, 163 kills, 163 digs. Very unique player skill set. She's not someone that's just going to hang back and hit hammer shots like Reese Knave.
Right.
She is going to be all over the place.
Yes, she will. And she's just an elite athlete.
She is worth the price of admission. Even if Tipton doesn't play their best, come watch her. On part B is, let's support the Tigers and let's beat this team because they're ranked the highest in our, like, this could be for conference title if we could
without
beat them.
A doubt, this is for conference title.
Because Wilden still has to play Mid Prairie.
Yeah, and I don't see Wilton. We played Wilton. I don't see Wilton beating Mid Prairie. I do think our best game can beat Mid Prairie. Again, if Zane's on, if Pacey's swinging well, our front row's doing their job. Honestly, our back row, because you talk about Evans, one of her big things is her aces, right? I mean, her serve efficiency is amazing. You know, when you look at Olivia Tucker, Hadley Hinderacher, Peyton Daidlow, that back row is gonna have to come to play. Honestly, those three junior girls are obviously great friends, and they're kind of fun to watch play together because we've watched them since they were in third grade playing. They're elite back row players as well, and my hope is that I don't think Evans has seen a back row that can return her serves like we can.
Yeah, and I think West Liberty is probably the closest. Yep. They do a really good job.
They have a great libero.
But I don't think they've played them yet. So they still have us, West Liberty, and Wilton left to play. Maybe not Wilton.
Like I said, get out there, watch this team. They're worth the price of admission.
Absolutely.
And then next week, we actually have three home games in a row. So we have Thursday night, and then next Tuesday and Thursday night. We play Albanette Tuesday and Comanche on Thursday, and then we're into the postseason.
Crazy. I just can't believe that we're already almost done with fall sports.
I know.
When you have kids that are in high school, you want it to slow down just a little bit. Like, you always want to speed up to get to that spot, and then when it gets here, you're like, whoa, slow down just a second
here. And
it
flies.
So, perfect. All right, so let's rock into the football contest. What do we got from this week?
We both didn't do amazing. We both went 13-7 last week.
Unacceptable.
And there's one game I didn't even get to write down because it was the Cowboys-Packers, and they ended in a tie, which is an NFL rule that needs to change because I can't stand watching a tie in an NFL football game.
Someone brought up a point. What if you did it like you just kept moving back? So you start off 30-yard line and just keep kicking back, but then it puts a lot of pressure on the kicker's hands.
Bring in the right kicker then.
Yeah, true. Some of these kickers, it's getting wild. Like, they're trying 65 yards attempts and they're like making them.
I know.
And they still have distance. It's not like they're hitting the top of, or the bottom of the bar there.
No.
Pretty incredible. All right, let's jump into them. First game is Albernette Bellevue. Woo! This is legit two undefeated teams. Or not undefeated, but that's undefeated in district.
In district. That should be a great game.
This could be, if Bellevue wins, this could be for the districts. I'm going with Albernette. I don't trust Bellevue yet. They have two elite athletes that are just tearing up the football
field. Their quarterback is probably one of the best in the state.
Yeah.
He's good. I got Albanet as well in this one.
All right. Anamosa versus Monticello. This one is extremely important for us. My heart really needs Monticello for a multitude of reasons. I just not sure they have enough. They have a freshman quarterback.
That's what does it for me. I can't pick a freshman quarterback.
Go with it. I'm going with Anamosa.
I'm going with Anamosa.
Sorry, that was your pick
first. No, but I'm the same way. I already had it written down. Anamosa.
All right, next one, Tipton versus West Branch. Again, my heart wants nothing more. I'm going to cruise the loop for a half hour straight if Tipton wins. You'll never hear the end that Tipton beat West Branch. But if you look at it on paper, West Branch just has more offensive firepower than we do.
They do.
And I don't see our defense being able to hold them under 14 points. I just don't. And right. So with that, I'm going with West Branch.
Well, you know me. I'm going Tipton.
Good.
Because the rally cry, let's go. This is a rivalry game. No reason.
Good for you.
We shouldn't be up for this football game.
Good for you.
Friday night.
All right. East Marshall against East Buchanan.
Almost. Again, they keep doing this to us. I'm going to go East Marshall this time.
All right. I will go East Buchanan just for the heck of it.
Sounds good.
All right, the next one. This one, if for some reason you're out to eat, this one will be over. The lights will be off before the lights come on. North Lynn against North Cedar.
Oh, God.
Give me North Lynn.
I'll take North Lynn as well.
Apologize for making the trek, North Lynn. You won't be playing for very long.
Oh, man.
Running clock by second quarter.
Wow. Yeah, that's a tough game.
If you're at North Cedar...
That is a tough scheduled game. Are they in the same conference?
Same districts.
My God. Okay.
North Cedar needs to go down to either eight man or a ball, one of the two.
Right.
And wow. If they want to be competitive,
yeah.
Or some of their kids can come to Tipton, one of the two. That's the easy way to make that happen.
That'll work too.
All right. Next game: South Winneshiek against Wapsie Valley. South Winneshiek is now home of Sid Hesse, who's a freshman.
Ooh, that's a good point.
He plays quarterback. I don't think he starts, but he has gotten in. Old Tipton kid. Really wish that kid was still here, that family.
Wapsie Valley lost last week.
Wapsie Valley won, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, really? Oh, I feel like they disappointed me on one of these games. Oh, yeah, they did win over Maquoketa Valley, which is impressive. Because Mack Valley's good.
This is your pick.
Oh, I'm going to go Wapsie Valley.
I am as well. All right, the next one, Midland against Maquoketa Valley. I will take Maquoketa Valley, even though they are struggling, and I called that out. I said it's the last time I'm going with them, but I still am going to switch with them.
Again, against Midland, an eight-man team last year. Yeah, Mack Valley.
All right, another big one, West Burlington against West Burlington Notre Dame against Wilton. Wilton had a tough injury situation with the Jenner kid, I heard.
Yeah, Jenner Hoekstra. I think he broke his shoulder.
I don't know if that's a thing.
Yeah, there are dislocations of shoulders, but he broke his shoulder. I still say Wilton has the firepower to beat this team.
Give me Wilton as well. Durant against Cardinal. Cardinal might be the worst name for a school I've ever heard of, but I will go Durant.
I'm going to go Durant on that one as well.
Okay.
Durant's a good football team.
Northern Iowa against North Dakota.
Hey, can I add one high school game to this pick?
Let's do it.
There is a massive game.
South Hardin.
There's a massive game in 1A on Friday night. Number four, South Hardin plays number two, Grundy Center.
I hate South Hardin. Let's go with Grundy. I'm just kidding. Let's go with Grundy Center because I know you're going with
South Hardin. And
good for you.
And Grundy Center is riding a 44 game win streak.
Give me Grundy Center all day long. Give me Grundy Center.
All right.
In fact, we might just have to start making our own games because some of these are awful. Northern Iowa against North Dakota. Who do you got?
North Dakota State. This is North Dakota. I still have to go North Dakota.
Give me Northern Iowa.
All right.
Big one. Cincinnati against Iowa State. Iowa State just lost both their starting corners. I will take Cincinnati.
Ooh, okay. I'm going to go ISU still.
All right. Loras against Central College.
Oh, you know I'm going Central.
Give me Central as well. Michigan against Wisconsin. Give me Michigan.
All day, Michigan.
Alabama against Vanderbilt.
This is actually going to be a good game.
Yeah.
For once.
Yeah.
Who I'm still going to go Alabama.
Give me Alabama. They just came off an enormous win against Georgia. Yeah, I'll stick with them. Their quarterback, I really like him a lot.
Yep.
Alabama's quarterback.
Yeah, he's,
Florida State, Miami.
That's not bad. I'm going with Miami.
I'll go Florida State.
Yeah.
North Carolina, Clemson.
Man, Clemson's a disappointment.
But they have been.
But North Carolina's
I called Clemson to go to the national championship game at the beginning of the year, and they have not done
it. Yeah, but UNC's a dumpster fire. Still go Clemson on this.
Even with Bill Belichick?
Even with Bill Belichick.
Give me Clemson. All right, TCU, Colorado. TCU all day long.
Yep, I'm going to go TCU on that as well.
Browns, Vikings.
God, Browns have a new quarterback.
Dylan yeah, I got rid of Joe Flacco, benched him.
That may have to go Vikings.
Vikings as well. I was kind of hoping you go Browns.
I know you were.
Chargers, Commanders. That's a good game, actually.
That's a good game. I'm going to go Commanders.
Give me the Commanders. Seahawks, Buccaneers.
You choose.
Buccaneers. Who you got?
Bucks. I'm going to go Bucks as well on this one.
And the last one, Eagles, Broncos.
Got to go Eagles, right? I'm going Eagles.
I'm going to go Broncos.
All right.
Eagles are due to have some bad luck. So.
Cooper? Never.
Actually, it's Cooper against Riley.
Oh, well, that's a good one. I like that.
You got two white cornerbacks going against each other.
I like that.
So, you got anything? What did you learn this week?
Man, what did I learn this week? So, I'm not in the final stages of building a house, but I'm in the stage where I have to pick where, like, light switches and stuff go.
Yep.
Found out I'm much more of a grand scheme guy. When you get me in that detail, like, where do you put a register? Where do you put a light switch? What kind of ceiling fan do you want? I'm horrible at that. So, if there's anyone listening who's got an eye for interior design and you need to, like, want to give me a hand, I'm all ears.
Well, that's good. I can't wait to see the finished product of that. Absolutely. It's looking good already. If you're up in Pleasant View Drive, come take a look at that thing. Spawn and Rose, I think they hit their quarterly number in Q3 on it with
did.
All the wood.
I guarantee they did.
What did I learn? I didn't learn much. I did learn that baseball is implementing the balls and strikes through a computer AI program, which is much needed, in my opinion. They're not doing it. It's only for like two replays that they're going to get it for. They're not doing it live. Because I've always said, put an earpiece in the ump's ear and tell them, ball strike. And they can still make their calls and look cool.
Yep.
But give them the right call. And I say that because you look at the NFL, everything's got to be, they want it to be perfect. They want to know if the ball crossed the line. They want to know if it was a fumble. They're watching a hair of the skin touching.
Yep.
But baseball doesn't give a crap.
No.
It's like, get it right. If it's a ball, it's a ball. If it's a strike, it's a strike. They have the technology. Use it. Baseball refuses to use that stuff.
Could not agree more.
So I'm excited for them to implement that. I think baseball needs to get with the times and start doing more of that. They did the pitch clock. That was great.
Yep.
They did now this AI. Do it. I want a full implementation. You add a salary cap into the teams, and baseball might be back on my docket.
And hey, guys, we're in the best time of the year.
This
we're
is the best
baseball
time.
Postseason. We're hard of football season, hard of cross country season. We're getting near the volleyball postseason. It is.
And basketball's coming.
It doesn't get better than the month of October if you're a sports fan.
Tipton Old Man League's about to start up. In fact, I think tonight was opening night.
OML's going, so it's all good.
All right, I'm going to leave us with a couple. Inky Johnson, those of you that know him, he's the man. I like his stuff, but it rang true this week when I was listening to this for this Tiger football team. So if you're still listening to this, pay attention to this because it's super important.
Hey, get out. Tiger volleyball Thursday night, Tiger football Friday night.
Good kudos. So I'll leave you with this one.
Can you be committed to the process of what you're doing without being emotionally attached to the results of what you're doing? In other words, if you don't get what you thought you was going to get, will you still be the same individual? Pope says it. You judge the character of a man not by where he stands in times of comfort and convenience. You judge the character of a man by where he stands in times of challenge and controversy.
Go Tigers.